And you're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Support for this program comes from Greater Madison Music City. Through proven strategies, success stories, and challenges, the Music City Circuit presented by Greater Madison Music City will highlight music tourism's role as a driver of urban transformation, offering valuable insights on how to shape our future as a music city while empowering our local musicians and music-related businesses. The Music City Circuit, coming soon to select streaming platforms. More information at ourgmmc.org.
Welcome to the Access Hour, where each week WORT offers you the opportunity to fly your program over the radio. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors. We'd like this show to be as unpredictable as possible, so we need your creative ideas. It's a fair trade. You give us what you've got, and we give you the facilities and any help you need to get your program airborne. So let your mind wander and wonder. And when the inspiration for some pretty good radio glows with a clear, bright light, get in touch. Just go to WORTFM.org and look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Programs are scheduled first come, first served. And now it's time to begin another foray into the freest form program on the WORT schedule, the Access Hour.
These are the community radio blues. Say your control board just quit working, and it was only 25 years old. Control board just quit working, and it's only 25 years old. Landlord says you gotta move, cause your studio building's just been sold. After you finished a 2-hour remote, you found out that the patch cord had a short. Two-hour remote and that main patch cord had a short. The air shifter who's on in 5 minutes just called up and said her car won't start.
That one at least called up before the show, not during.
The engineer just told you the transmitter decided it's finally old enough to smoke. The engineer told you the transmitter decided it's finally old enough to smoke. Need to buy a new transformer, but the checkbook says you're broke. Down to one tape recorder, and the stereo's just gone out of phase. One working tape recorder, and the stereo's all out of phase. You found out the log ain't been filled out for the last 3 days. The board of directors keeps talking about a strip format, but the staff says they want to flow. Board of directors talking strip, but the staff says they want to flow. The Save the Penguins Media Collective just demanded a 3-hour weekly show. Frequencies drifting and your modulations way off course. Your frequencies drifting and your modulation is way off course. and your business manager just told you they're getting a divorce. All your Coltrane records got stolen, and the mayor complains about your news. Your Coltrane records just got stolen, and the mayor's complaining about your news. Just sitting in a control room with the community radio blues. Community radio blues.
That was the Community Radio Blues, performed by Bill Thomas at an NFCB conference in 1980. And this is the Access Hour. Thank you for joining us tonight for a special Pledge Drive edition. Tonight we'll be celebrating 50 years of listener support that has helped us upgrade our equipment by revisiting some of the equipment on-air mishaps and some unearthed gems from the WRT archives throughout our 50 years. First, let's introduce our guest for this evening, who will shed some light on what went wrong in these clips and how we found them. First, I'll start out. My name is Adrienne Ranney. I'm the Volunteer and Outreach Coordinator here at WORT. I'm also the Access Hour producer. Aaron?
Oh, I'm not closest to the mic. Hey, I'm Aaron Scholes. I'm the Digital Production Director here, and I tinker with things.
I'm Tom Jones, the IT and Facilities Director. If it has a button or a cord coming from it, I have to fix it.
I'm Doug Ranney. I'm a volunteer here at WORT, and I'm leading the audio archiving effort.
Great, now that we're all acquainted. Doug, can you explain the process of how you found the Community Radio Blues that we listened to at the top of the hour here and converted into a digital format for us to listen to today? Also, why is WRT archiving all of its old shows?
Well, I found it just in the course of, over the last 2 years, going through an entire 50-year collection of old audio tape that's been down in WORT's basement all this time. And the process has just been tape by tape, going through, putting them on a tape deck, listening to them, deciding if they're worth archiving or not, and if they are, then we're converting them to a digital version, which basically just consists of putting it on the tape deck, playing it, sending it through an analog to digital converter, and then recording it in a digital editing software and saving it as an MP3 audio file. As far as why WORT is archiving all of its old shows, I mean, aside from the obvious that we want to hang on to them, a lot of this old media is deteriorating and in danger of, if you wait another 5-10 years, they may not be playable anymore. They might be physically deteriorated enough, so we want to get to them before that happens. And a lot of these formats are kind of obsolete. So if there was a show that was on an audio tape down in the basement, you wanted to hear it, it's kind of an involved process to find the right machine to play it on and then, make some sort of copy of it that you could do something with. So just converting everything to a digital format makes it much more accessible and much easier to work with.
Great. Thank you for that. Tom?
What?
What are we doing today in the 21st century to archive all of our new content?
We stream our audio signal, one, to get it out to our WORT app, which you should download and listen to, but also for a Listen Live page. But then that same stream also goes to a local server here, which saves it in a very high quality format as well as a medium quality format. Those get actually put up to our archive server and also gets sent to a very top secret data center that I cannot divulge the name of here, to be stored forever. We also have a very low quality digital stream that we use for air check. If the FCC wants to come in and investigate us, we've got multiple ways for them to be able to do so.
Great. Okay, and we're going to be hearing more from Tom, Doug, and Aaron in a little bit through the rest of the show. But first, we've got a few clips of some on-air mishaps from the early days of WORT in the late 1970s, and I think you're going to recognize some of these voices.
Okay, you just heard Sweet and Easy to Love Interrupted. WORT was temporarily off the air. We are now back on the air. I guess it's the weather that's wreaking havoc with our tower here. And I think we're back to normal now. Now the phone is ringing, naturally, I guess, after something like that happens. So we were off the air for a few minutes, and we are now back on the air. And this is WORT in Madison, Wisconsin, back on the air.
Now, if you've been wondering about the strength of your signal these days, our signal these days, well, Wednesday night, our transmitter exploded, so we are broadcasting at a much lower power. Now, replacing the part that blew will cost us approximately $300 to $500, which we absolutely do not have. Therefore, we must ask for a lot of additional help in filling our coffers so we can get back to full power again. Also, you may have noticed that your stereo light may be flashing on and off during some parts of our programming. We're not broadcasting in stereo. Now, if you switch your tuner to the mono position, you will find your reception much improved. Bear with us and keep letting us know about things that are good or bad about our signal quality. We will have things worked out as soon as possible within our pinched budget.
Well, I can remember things like substituting on a late night show, and then you had to turn something off in the transmitter room for the night, and you had to go down this dark, creepy, slippery, icy alley and let yourself into the ice-cold transmitter room and turn something off, and then you'd run out and lock it and run back as fast as I could down the alley, which was trying not to fall down.
It never occurred to us that was an issue at the time. Yeah. We did a lot of stuff.
Pretty
like
scary.
That.
Not very user-friendly.
Yeah.
The
transmitter
remember,
room was a really attractive room, too. It was beautifully furnished in modern decor, as I recall.
Large
concrete
closet.
And plywood. And
well, we got trained by Pat Ryan, my friend and I, and you know, he would show all these knobs and dials, and we'd try to remember it. And then what you would do, since the station wasn't on all day long, you know, you would come out and you'd go to the business office down at the corner of, I think, Atwood and Winnebago. They give you the key to let yourself in, and then you'd sit there, you know, and try to remember what you were told.
If you've been a WORT listener for a while, I'm sure you recognized Rockin' John in that first clip. That was John Lundquist in the second clip asking for listener support because the WORT transmitter blew up.
Real in John Lundquist.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. And again, this is a pledge drive show, so we are asking for money to update our equipment again. That number to call is 608-256-2001, or you can pledge online at wrtfm.org. And that third clip was Bonnie Comback from Two for the Blues describing where the old transmitter used to be. So, Tom, where was our old transmitter, and where is it now in modern day?
Well, according to Bonnie, it was down at the end of a long, dark, spooky, scary alley. I have no idea. It was nearby the Winnebago studios, but for all I know, they built a log cabin to store it. I not a clue. Nowadays, it's down long, dark, scary forward drive, kind of on the west side, off of Whitney Way, and our little corner of the world there is dingy and dark, but it's not really all that scary.
All right, nice. And you do actually in your office, you have some cameras to observe it, don't you?
I have cameras to observe the nitrogen gauges, which are used to pressurize the coax that's going up the tower so that we don't get a spark, so that that does not blow up.
So is that something that could still happen today, the transmitter blowing up, I mean?
No. I mean, back then it was a lot of tubes that heated up. Having a transmitter blow up, as described, was probably a bit of hyperbole. But there still could be things that can happen. Without nitrogen in the coax going up the tower, we could generate a spark in there if there's too much moisture, which then could short it out. But it's all solid state now, and blowing up is not really an option, barring a lightning strike.
I have a question for you, Tom. How does the signal get from Bedford Street to the transmitter?
Floppy drives.
Oh, so you got like
that's where they all went.
Yep.
Relay service, like constantly all day long.
Yep. Sneaker net for radio. Now we've actually got two internet connections that go out there, which is our main studio to transmitter link, and then we've also got a microwave signal that broadcasts from here and goes directly line of sight to another antenna on the tower that picks it up.
Is that what that tower in the back of the building is?
That's actually to hold antennas for our internet access, but that also is for the STL.
So this next question is for both Aaron and Tom. What have you found to be the most common reasons that our hosts go off the air?
Being comatose.
Operator error. No, let's see. The first big one that I remember, and I'm like overmodulating heavily. I can hear it through my headphones. You want to turn me down, Emmett? I'm like blasting. There we go. I think the first one I remember was when the board blew up in 2019.
Yeah, right after I started here.
Yeah, it was on a Friday.
At 2:17 p.m.
No, it was later in the evening than that. It was when Dave Watts was on. Because Dave Watts came, I was still here and you were still here, and Dave Watts came running downstairs and said, "Hey, something's wrong." And the board was going, blah, 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 blah.
I remember that now.
Yeah.
What does that mean, that the board blew up?
So.
Hyperbole.
Yeah, good question. I don't think we ever figured out if it was a power surge or if it was something. I assume that the board itself fried out.
It was one of the modules in the old board that actually would then take out basically every fader that was in the board.
Right.
It was not the power supply. It was the componentry, which we had to send down to Furman, Texas. I forget where they were, to hopefully try to repair it, which they were able to do once, but then it blew up again.
Yeah, and it started shorting out due to certain things that you did on the board. If you used the cue speaker, it would...
Yeah.
It would go off the air for a few seconds.
It was exciting.
Yeah. I think that's probably the most common thing, is just like something happens to the gear here in the station and then suddenly we are off the air. I don't think it's ever been, in my experience, been transmitter or anything external. It's almost always been something happens here, like we have a power surge or the board blows up or, yeah.
Historically, is it true that pretty much all the equipment Wart's been forced to use is secondhand by the time you get it?
I don't think so.
Not anymore. Because we have more than $300 or $500 in the checking account if we absolutely have to do it nowadays. And we're trying to, you know, I'm happy I'm not back in the day when we did have to, like, re-solder boards and try to find tubes that were no longer manufactured and everything like that. Things are a lot more modular now and a lot easier to source to really keep us on the air. There's a lot of stuff in our rack that is still 15, 17, 20 years old, but it's still functioning really well for now. And we have ways of bypassing it if something does go bad nowadays.
Well, and the new boards, those were...
Well, yeah.
Yeah, those took care of a lot of the issues that we were having.
Yes, that they did.
Awesome. Well, we have a clip from a 1996 pledge drive promo from the NFCB, which is actually the perfect segue into our pledge break.
I'm Brenda Dudley Rice, and you're listening to the world's first all-pledge radio station. All-pledge, all the time.
Now, for those listeners who are just tuning in, that's all of you, because this is our very first broadcast. We'd like to tell you a little about what all-pledge radio is all about.
You see, at a certain point, Len and I found ourselves both asking ourselves the same question. Why does a pledge campaign ever have to stop?
Why?
Why not just do it all the time and raise a lot more money?
Based on that theory, we decided to start our own radio station. In fact, we're so committed to the idea of all pledge radio, we started this station with no money.
So our goal during this first half hour of all pledge radio is to raise enough money to stay on the air for at least another half hour.
But to do that, we're going to need your help. Help in the form of pledges of cash.
You see, it really is up to you, the listener, to support All Pledge Radio.
So let's just listen to a sample of the kind of educational, uplifting programming we're going to be offering. And then we'll be right back to tell you how to pledge your money to All Pledge Radio.
And this is the WRT Winter Pledge Drive. As you may have heard earlier, we are... Actually, we have a matching grant, which is pretty unusual, that for any new or lapsed donor, and lapsed donor meaning somebody who has not given in about 18 months, your pledge is actually doubled. And we do have a couple of pledges right now, actually. First being from Don in Madison, and he has a comment here. Hurrah for the Access Hour and community access to the airwaves. Thank you so much, Don. And we also have Leslie from Madison, and she chose the I Miss Nixon bumper sticker, which is fantastic. Those are actually really popular, this pledge drive, Emmett. What else do we have that we can offer people?
Well, at the next level of $35 is the new wart patch. You know, it's like the bumper sticker, but it's a very nice patch, you know, 3 by 1/13 or 1 1/3 inches, embroidered, it's gorgeous, iron or so on. And if we want to go to the 40 level, Progressive Magazine, 1 year subscription. 50 level is the Wart crossbody bag. 70 is the rib knit Wart winter hat. And then this is, I think, was new the last time, was the umbrella.
Yes, and I actually want to say something about this umbrella. So how normal umbrellas work, when you close them, the water will run down onto your hands, and then that's why you shake them out. This umbrella closes in reverse, so it actually stands up when you close it, which locks all the water in as you stand it up.
And that's at the $89.90 level, and it's important to mention that the umbrella is station pickup only. We won't ship that to you.
That's true. It's because it's rather large. And we do have a new long sleeve t-shirt at the $100 level, which is actually a 1980 design by Dan Slick. I'm sure actually quite a few people have seen this design. It's a picture of a horizon with like blue to white to yellow. And then it's these musical notes that as they come down, they turn into people dancing on the horizon. It's actually a really pretty poster originally. And I do have it framed at my house, which is great. So you can call in and pledge for any of these wonderful thank you gifts at 608-256-2001, or you can pledge online at wrtfm.org. We do have Ken out in the lobby who's waiting to take your call. Ken is the best. And I think now we can actually get back to the Access Hour, already in progress. So our next few clips are still actually discussed today around the station. In fact, just last week, Monday, I spoke to our evening receptionist, Ken, who I just mentioned, who's waiting to take your call, about the Great Silent Movement.
Testing, testing. Hello, this is WORT returning to the airwaves. You can hold your calls, hold your calls. We are indeed back. We are back and we are in business here. Hold the calls, please. We had a little technical problem with the door, and John Lindquist could not get back into the studio. So did he panic? No. He just about called everybody at Wart who lives at Wart nearby, who works at Wart who lives nearby, who happened to be listed in the phone book, and Kay Burns to the rescue. All right. Actually, Beethoven wrote a postlude to the concerto you just heard that lasted however minutes long it was in duration. It was supposed to be for silent instruments. So with Beethoven's wishes, we included that last final silent movement to the Beethoven Piano Concerto in D, Opus 61A, right here in WORT in Madison. Some selections from the Sky 4 album while we're trying to get our beep 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 straightened out here. Jazz been kind of plaguing us on and off for the last hour and a half or so. Those of you who are just tuning in have been calling up, and thanks for calling, but we're going to try to keep covering it up. I was corrected, even though it matches up really well with things in G major and minor, it is a D tone according to one of the listeners. And the phone company says we're covering it up pretty well, but it's a little hard really to do a classical music show with all that beeping unless you really consistently play some really loud things. Anybody want to hear Laurie Anderson? Let's see, what else do we have here?
Yeah, right.
You had your program this morning, and
the
John,
beep show.
Yeah, the beep show. I really felt sorry for you, John. I was listening to that this morning, and I don't know what I would have done if that would have happened to me, but you really kept your cool.
Well, as long as I could find things that were compatible with the key that beep was in, you know, it was beep, 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 beep. I don't know if anybody caught that. But
yeah, we had some technical problems during John's program.
So that first clip is pretty self-explanatory. John gets locks himself out of the studio. But Tom and Aaron, what was going on with that beeping noise?
Well, there was a really rude driver that cut somebody off, and someone was also very slow to their horn, so they were continually, no.
It was a Yugo, I'm sure.
It was a Yugo, yeah, that's right, yeah.
I thought it was a Yoko Ono new performance. That just made sense. No idea. I even went back to the engineering committee here and said, anyone have any idea what this could be? And I played them the clip, and we didn't know what kind of phone system was there at the time. It was probably some Telos equipment that actually took the signal and put it into the board. But those would not normally make those sounds, so we really don't have a clue what it was.
Well, I mean, we've updated our phones and our new soundboards, so you don't think that could happen now, right?
There's one host who perpetually has to have a dial tone during their show. That just is a normal thing, and so, but that's part of the shtick nowadays, I think.
Yeah.
But other than that, the phones going into the board are brand new. They can still be a little confusing for those who have never used a phone before. So I guess it could happen.
So next we're going to switch gears here, and we're going to revisit some clips from the WORT audio archives. And Doug, you picked out these clips for us tonight, right?
Yeah. This next clip is sort of legendary around WORT. People still talk about it all the time, years later. It's from the Breakfast Special, which was the very popular morning show in the 80s and 90s, kind of like the 8 o'clock buzz is now. And it was broadcast live from Dolly's Fine Foods for a long time. At the time in 1982, where this clip is from, Michaela Majune was the host. So why don't we let Michaela introduce this next clip?
One of the most exciting things that happened there was the time that Lily Tomlin came to visit. And we had set this thing up. She was appearing in town that night. And actually, I guess the promoter had tipped off TV stations. There were a couple of TV cameras there. But she didn't show up and didn't show up. And she was my idol. I was so nervous about interviewing her. And eventually, she came in dressed as a waitress. She took off her coat and yelled out, "Sorry I'm late," and immediately started pouring coffee and started serving people coffee. It was great. And I was sitting there thinking, I wonder if she remembers I'm supposed to do this interview. And finally she yelled out, "Don't bug me, I'm going on break," and lit up a cigarette. She doesn't smoke, but Mildred, her waitress character, smokes. And she came over and sat down, and we did the whole first break as though she were Mildred, a waitress at Dolly's. And at the end of it, we said, well, this has just been kind of a put-on. This is really Lily Tomlin. And we went to music and did, she stayed for, I don't know, an hour. We had a great interview. And afterwards, people told me that they were listening and making a mental note. Gee, I should go to Dolly's more often. The waitress there sounds really funny. So it was exciting.
So I was just, when I was getting this clip together for the show, I was assuming that's all the introduction this is going to need. But I was informed that some of our younger listeners may not know who Lily Tomlin was, which surprised me. But if that's the case, I think it's important to understand why this clip is, why this episode was so legendary at WORT. In the early 80s, Lily Tomlin was a huge star. I mean, she was right up there with, you know, Eddie Murphy and Robin Williams, Richard Pryor, George Carlin, Steve Martin. I mean, all these comedians were in the same conversation. So for Lily Tomlin to be in town, a little town of Madison, you know, flyover state, this little, you know, dinky community radio station, and a huge star like Lily Tomlin is going to come spend some time, you know, at Dolly's Cafe with Michaela Majune and just shoot the breeze. It was a huge deal. I mean, that is why it is remembered to this day. So here is the clip of Lily Tomlin's appearance on The Breakfast Special.
That particular brand of noise was Graham Parker doing Protection from his Squeezing Out Sparks album. Good morning, this is The Breakfast Special. It's now 7:51 in the morning. My name is Michaela Majune. We're expecting mostly cloudy, windy, and cold weather today. Occasional flurries with a high of 31 degrees. Tonight, clearing and cold and a low of 18. And tomorrow, partly cloudy and milder with a high of 40 degrees. You know, on this program, here I am down at Dolly's every single morning of the week. And the waitresses are here, they're doing all this work, they're servicing the customers. Well, they're serving the customers, they don't exactly service them, at least not while I'm here. And we never really get to talk with the waitresses here at Dolly's. Well, I asked Mildred to sit down and have a chat. Hi, Mildred.
Hi, how are you, Dolly?
I'm going okay. I'm not Dolly, I'm Michaela.
That's right, you're
right.
Michaela.
Right, Dolly's the owner of the joint. She's the one who pays your, occasionally pays
Tell me
you.
About it.
Right. How's it going this morning, Mildred?
It begrudges every cent.
And you know better here. Than I do. How are the tips here?
Tips aren't real good, but they're not bad. We got a nice bunch comes in here.
Yeah, there's like a crowd of regulars in leather
regulars.
Jackets.
Right. Nice bunch here.
So how are you doing? How long have you been waitressing here?
Here at Dolly's?
Yeah.
Only 6-7 months.
How do you like it? How does it compare with other places you've waitressed?
Well, it's not your worst and it's not your best. But I enjoy it here. I had a pretty good time. The only thing I don't like, the newcomers, you know, and plus, you know, Dolly's foreign.
Oh, is she? Where's she from? You know, I've never seen her. She never comes down
like
here.
She talks like she's foreign.
Yeah?
You know? And she doesn't understand, like, the real tradition of American waitressing.
Which is?
Nobody wears uniforms. They don't have lingo, proper lingo here. You go in, you ask for a hamburger. You ask, you, There's no atmosphere here except God love them for the people to come in. They bring the atmosphere.
Boy, do they ever. It's so thick you could cut it with a knife sometimes. I noticed that you're the only waitress here in a uniform.
Well, because I take pride.
Did you ever go to, like, waitressing?
Hairnets? You don't see a hairnet anymore.
No,
they
not in
care.
This place.
Let the hair fall right in the coffee.
They figure it's like adds to the food or something.
What it is, most of them have their eye on some other profession. They're not really interested in being a waitress.
So they're using this as a way
sort
upwards.
Of a springboard upward, right.
What do you think they graduate
you
to?
You don't see a good
this.
Pair of duty shoes either.
Oh, where do you go to get your duty shoes and your uniform?
Well, I go out here to the mall. I went, since I hit this town, I haven't lived here all my life in Madison.
Yeah, where are you from originally?
I'm here from, I live near Chicago originally. Uh-huh. My family was, I was brought up near Chicago. But they got a nice uniform shop out at the mall, Gloria K's.
Uh-huh.
I got a nice
I've
pair
heard
of duty
of it.
Shoes.
Yeah.
I can run circles around these young girls. You know why?
I've seen you.
Duty
you're,
shoes.
You're always there with a refill and a cup of coffee. You're just incredible. It's almost like you're psychic sometimes, Mildred. I mean, you know what I want before I even ask for it.
That's
How is
what
that
I
possible?
Mean. That's part of being a good waitress.
So you started out in the Chicago area. I mean, is that where you cut your teeth, so to speak, on waitressing?
I've been waitressing 37 years.
No, it's not possible. Not you look so young, though. It's incredible.
It's the vitality of keeping up for a job like this. You know, you meet a lot of young kids come in.
What about the quality of food?
I keep sharp.
I can tell you. What about the quality of food in the time that you've been waitressing?
Oh, the food's deteriorated. First of all, you got too much processed food. We used to make mashed potatoes in the kitchen, and we used to make good mashed potatoes.
But now?
I wish I had my wallet here. I got some old pictures I could show you.
Oh, that would be nice. Of course, we're on the radio, so it might not go across
well.
Oh,
I don't
well,
care about the radio.
It.
I wanted to show them to
oh,
you.
Oh, good. This is a very friendly place. I mean, sit here day after day. And
no shirt, no shoes, no service.
Right.
I
I've never come in
to
without
it.
A shirt, but I noticed there are several other people here who are bare-chested this morning. Well, Mildred, I know you have to get back to your shift. Thanks a lot. If you could get me another cup of coffee. We're going to go to music now. We'll be back in a couple of minutes here on the Breakfast Special. It's 7:55.
Okay, I got to get to work.
And that was, I don't know who that was. Who cares who that was? Oh, Blanket of Secrecy. I shouldn't be so irreverent. Haha. That's a new one from them. Remember Me and You. We're coming up to news time. I would like to mention at this point that Mildred, the waitress, actually, we kind of put you on with that. She's not a waitress here at Dolly's. Her real name is Lily Tomlin. Actually, that's not your real name, is it?
No, Mary's my real name. Mother's name is Lily.
The reason I know that is we have a classical programmer here from Paducah, Kentucky, named James Rem. And James was recently home. His mother, unfortunately, was having surgery in the hospital. He asked one of the volunteers, can you tell me how to get to the coffee shop? And he noticed that the woman was wearing a tag that said Lily
You're
Tomlin.
Not serious.
I'm serious.
And my mother was in the hospital. That's true.
And he said to her, do you know that there's a famous comedian named Lily Tomlin? And she said, well, sure I do. That's my daughter. And he said, what? And she said, yes, she took my name.
Oh, that's funny.
So that's true. The truth about you is that your name is Mary.
Yeah.
Why did you take on your mother's name?
I liked my mother's name all my life, but one time my brother and I were going to audition for a show in New York, and we were waiting out line to go in, and we heard they were looking for English people. So when I got up to the desk, I always thought my mother's name, because I love B. Lily and things like that.
Very
so,
much so.
So I always thought my mother's name, Lily Tomlin.
Yes,
you know.
Indeed.
And so when we got to the desk, I said, I put our names down as Lily Tomlin and Richard Tomlin.
Is that his name, Richard?
Yeah.
Lily and Richard. Did you get the parts?
No.
Oh, too bad. Well, maybe it wasn't because of that.
But I got into another show as a result of it.
You've been in many, many shows, and I hope to talk to you about them in the next however long you're here.
Okay.
It's really incredible down here at Dolly's. The place is packed with people.
It is.
There are bright lights and TV cameras and a lot of brouhaha, as we were talking about before. And Lily is the only person, I think, who's ever been in here in a waitress uniform, because if you've been to Dolly's, you know that the waitresses don't wear them. And she has her name tag under her hanky, which is having trouble staying up. Mildred. Mildred was your idol. You were a waitress at one time, weren't you?
I have been, yes. But I never was like a great waitress, you know, a real...
That takes years.
Like
you had another call.
Oh, it does take years. In fact, I do a big monologue about always wanting to be a waitress and never wanting to be a star, you know, in my show. And how disappointed I am that I never made it as a waitress.
Is that true?
It's there's the the basis of it is ironically true. And so the first, I've told this story many times, but it bears telling, I guess, again.
Oh, please.
The first really great job I had as a waitress was at the original Howard Johnson's in New York, which is at 49th and Broadway.
The original Howard Johnson's?
It's the original, I don't
New
know if
York
it's the
Howard
one, the
Johnson.
New York Howard Johnson's. It's real tiny. It's not much bigger than this, really. And so... Most of the girls that worked there, they were all real young and they wanted to be actresses, you know, and so they would make themselves real attractive to wait on tables. They would never wear regulation uniform or duty shoes or hairnets or anything like that. And so they had Howard Johnson's waitress of the week every place else, see? And I said one day, how come we don't have waitress of the week? Because I always wore my uniform regulation, I wore big duty shoes, and I wore a hairnet and everything else, you know. And they'd come in the morning, they'd hem their uniforms way up to mini skirts so that they'd look sharp, and they'd wear little
outfits.
Tennis shoes, you know, so they'd look, their legs would look good. And their hair would be real big and bushy and full. And so I would duck down behind the counter. So because I was all in heavy waitress drag, I would duck down behind the... counter with the microphone, you know, you call down to the kitchen with, and I'd say, attention diners, your Howard Johnson's waitress of the week, Lily Tomlin, is about to make an appearance on the floor. And I'd come out, you know.
And so you came out to a standing ovation. Did you get good tips for that?
Excellent tips.
Wonderful. We'll have more tips for those of you who want to be waitresses and stars a little bit later. It's unfortunately time to break for the news. Well, Terry Fitzpatrick doesn't think it's unfortunate. I'm sorry, Terry. It's 8:02. You're listening to WORT in Madison, and here is the news with our beloved news director.
That's such a great piece of WORT history. Aaron, does WRT still do remotes like this, and are they difficult to pull off?
Well, they did a remote every single day for years. So this show took place away from the WRT studio, so they were running a remote every single morning, which blows my mind. Like, I cannot imagine doing that every single day.
But they left the equipment there, right?
Yeah, the equipment lived there, so you'd have to haul back and forth, and it was heavy. You know, some of that equipment we got rid of in our last purge, like it was big, heavy boxes and stuff like that. And then it was line of sight, like they were, or were they using a POTS line? I can't remember.
It was
line of sight. So you had to bounce. I think Norm explained to me they had to bounce the signal off of something and then back to our transmitter. So that was like across the Capitol. Stolly was over there. Since you can see where I'm pointing on the radio. Yes, we still do things like that, but we don't do anything as ambitious as an everyday remote, because that would be... I mean, we could probably do it. I'm sure our gear would explode after a certain amount of time. The closest thing we have is that Andy Moore does a year-end review at Willoughby's Diner, so that's sort of in celebration of, you know, of doing a diner thing. But I would love if we did... the buzz every day from a diner.
we do remotes,
right?
Like,
yeah,
like show remotes.
We do show remotes mostly. That's the majority of remote broadcasting, is simulcasting from, you know, sessions at McPike Park or Orton Park or something like that. But we've done a few more in the last couple of years of actual like remotes on site, mostly on the Access Hour, actually.
Yeah,
we did one from Jenna's Lounge. We did one from the bicycle. Place over around the corner. Talk remotes are not as common, and I wish they were more common. That would be it's a lot more fun than just setting up the gear and saying, well, there's the band.
So are they difficult to organize? Do you need multiple people to do them? Like, why don't you think they happen as often?
I think it's probably just that people are comfortable being in the station. And doing a music show remotely is possible, but it's sort of, for me, it defeats the purpose. Like, if you're doing a talk remote, you want to be somewhere where something is happening that has to do with being remote, because you can do a music show comfortably from a studio, and hauling a bunch of music out to a remote location and then doing it that way seems kind of not silly, but, you know, the Psychoacoustics does the remote every year with Beefus, so they sort of have a hybrid. They have a live show, and between the live show, they're DJing in the room where they are, wherever the show is, and also over the air. So that's sort of a nice hybrid. I don't know. I think it's just people don't maybe know that they could do it.
Oh, well, hopefully this will inspire some people to propose it. Oh, what?
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, Adrian. More to do.
Nobody listens to the Access Hour that's going to do that.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue into our next pledge break. So we're going to take a quick break, and then when we return, we're going to talk about WRT's 50th anniversary coming up. So that number to call is 608-256-2001, or you can go online and pledge at wrtfm.org. Ken is in the lobby, ready to take your call, and you can disprove Aaron by showing that you do listen to the Access Hour. but one thing that I do want to mention is that the Evergreen donations are a huge way that allow us at WRT to figure out our budgeting for the year. And it's kind of a set it and forget it type deal. There's no limit to how much you can donate per month, but we do have a minimum of $5 per month. And you just, it's connected to your banking information. It just comes out. You don't have to think about it. And that is what allows us to plan for big things like replacing our soundboards or doing some sort of ambitious project as, you know, possibly doing a live remote like 5 days a week, which would be really cool, which would make Tom and Aaron both so happy. But I think we have a donor to thank, don't we? Don't we, Emmett?
Yes, we do. Adrian, would you hit that bell, please? We have a generous donation from Cindy from Sun Prairie. Cindy likes the shows The Access Hour, Melon Floyd, and Green Morning Radio. And I have it on good authority that Cindy is also already a Evergreen donor. So you Evergreen donors out there, you know, you can still kick us a few extra dollars. You know, if you love The Access Hour and love WORT, we'd certainly appreciate that. And Cindy's going to pass on the thank you gift.
And we do actually just have another donation online. This is from Anonymous in Lodi. And they're a new donor, which means that their donation is actually going to be doubled, which is amazing. And again, I do want to remind you, if you are a new donor or a lapsed donor, which means you haven't given in 18 months, your donation is doubled, which is huge. And if we could just get a few more people to call in, we're getting close to our goal. And again, that number is 608-256-2001. Or you can go online if you don't want to talk to anybody on the phone, if that gives you anxiety, which sometimes it does for me. You can donate online at wrtfm.org, and it's very simple. And that way, actually, you can pay right away. You don't have to wait for a remittance envelope to get to you. And it's all taken care of. It's that simple. And I do want to just remind people that we do have some amazing thank you gifts. The I Miss Nixon bumper sticker is at the $30 level. $35 is the WRT patch. And this is different from our previous patches. Like Emmett said earlier, this looks like our rainbow bumper sticker with really nice stitching. 3 inches by 1 1/3 inch, and that can either be sewn on or ironed on. And of course, we have many other wonderful thank you gifts that Ken can describe to you on the phone. But now we can actually get back to the Access Hour. And let's start with talking about our 50th anniversary coming up. So WRT first went on the air in December of 1975, which means that we're nearing our 50th anniversary. And Aaron, can you explain what WRT is preparing for this celebration and how our listeners can help with that?
So it's basically when we tried to organize the idea of the 50th, and is it a birthday or is it an anniversary? I think it's
Don't
a birthday.
Don't start that again.
We've had this conversation.
I think it's
among
a birthday because, you know, it's the age of the station. Anyway, when we started talking about this, you know, quite a while ago, it was basically like we had a lot of crazy ideas. It was sort of an idea fest because there are so many things that we could do. And we spitballed for a while, and I realized after talking to several people that it was, here's what we should actually try to figure out what to do. So we have some events planned. The biggest one already on the books is the opening of the Atwood Music Hall in June. I don't remember the date on it. June 6th.
I think it's the first day that it's open. It's on a Friday, and I think
It's in early June, and we are part of the celebration. It's a blues celebration. Bunch of bands playing. So that's to benefit WRT, but we also have events like this that have come out just suddenly, like, oh, well, there's an access hour that's open, we're going to play some clips kind of thing. We also have basically an ask out to the public. If you have tapes, if you have flyers, if you have documents, you have stuff that you used when you were on the air here, we want to hear about it, we want to see it, we want to digitize your media. And that's, you can email wart50@wrtfm.org and someone will get back to you about what you have. If you have, and it's like, if you have a picture of a flyer or a t-shirt or whatever, we'll be able to figure out what to do with that. I've actually gotten some good responses to that. We're hoping to have a couple of live music celebrations elsewhere in the city, at various independent venues around. We're still trying to figure out where to have kind of an open air summer reunion sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Which more details will emerge when we finally figure out where we're going to do that. I've got some asks out for that. That's been requested by a lot of the folks that were around originally, wanting to have something outside. Don't want to go inside and get COVID, which I was like, oh, that's a really good idea.
Yeah, totally.
And
fair.
Summertime is a good time to do that sort of thing.
We're going to see if they get the mayor to rename Lake Monona.
Sorry, one more time.
We could try for that. We'll have to ask Stu if that's going to go through.
The Gulf of Wart.
Gulf of Wart?
Yeah, yes. Lake Wart. Yeah.
Well, maybe the bay. How about the Monona
the
Bay?
The Bay of Wart.
Yeah, the Bay of Wart.
Oh, that's better than the Bay.
Because it's
Pigs.
Really close to where we are. We wouldn't want to go for the whole lake, but the Bay of Wart.
Right.
Yeah. Wart Bay?
Yeah.
I guess it would be Wart Bay. That would be probably more important. I guess we could solicit right now if people want to rename their businesses or their landmarks after WRT, certainly for this year. We wouldn't say no. What else do we have going on?
We have a hotline too, right?
We have a hotline, and I don't remember the number.
321-9594?
That sounds right. Yep. So there's a hotline. We used to use the hotline during the pandemic for people to call in testimonials, and we were playing those on the air. But that's also a line for suggestions and for people to contact us if they have old stuff that they want to have us look at or use. Scan the flyers, digitize the tapes. I've gotten in touch with a bunch of people that were around at the beginning, and I've got some interviews lined up. We're just going to sort of play it by ear, and maybe more access hours like this. Hopefully get more of the hosts that have been around a long time involved, like Rockin' John and John Craniac and Chris Powers and that sort of thing. People that have been on the air for a long, Bonnie Comeback, to talk and to celebrate their old shows. Maybe play clips from their old shows that we've gotten out of the archive. That'd be a lot of fun.
Love to get Tony Castaneda and Greg Willard to revive News in a Blender.
News in a Blender.
Cats in the News.
Yep. So there's lots of stuff that we can do. We're just kind of playing it by ear. And as things roll out, we'll be sure and let you know.
Hmm. So how do the WOR... We kind of discussed it briefly. And I will say that for the Access Hour, I think starting in July, we're going to do at least one access hour a month that we dedicate to kind of diving back into the audio archives and having people come on and discuss them.
Yeah.
But other than that,
can we do that remotely?
You don't have to come.
Could go to people's houses and do it. Yeah. They could describe all of their Wart memorabilia around. Yeah. That'd be pretty cool. But other than that, what role do the archives play in the 50th? Do you think? And Doug, you can probably weigh in on this too.
What role do the archives play in the Wart 50th? I mean, they're kind of the record of 50 years of Wart, basically.
And we have an ongoing spreadsheet that you've put together that if people are looking to try to remember a show or they'd like to access it, that you have a running tally of that. How many entries are in that now?
Yeah, there is a spreadsheet of all the audio that has been digitized so far. Well, all the audio from old tapes. I think there probably is other audio that was already digital. The tapes that have been digitized, I think it's coming up on 1,300 entries at the moment. And there's probably tapes that haven't been gotten to yet down in the storage. I would say easily there's tens of thousands of hours, not tapes, but tens of thousands of hours, sorry, of tape down there.
Doug will be doing this until 2047.
Oh, that, yeah, at least.
And I'll take this opportunity as the volunteer and outreach coordinator to say that we are always looking for more people to volunteer to help with the archives and the archiving project. It is a lot of work, but it's very interesting. And you've actually given that whole archiving area in the basement a really nice facelift recently. It's quite moody down there and very nice.
One of the things that people may not realize is that archiving tape is a, you know, one-to-one ratio. In order to archive a tape, you got to play it. So you got to play it from start to finish. It isn't like
at
ripping
regular speed.
At regular speed. Yeah. You can't rip it like a CD. You got to put the tape in a machine and play it and turn on the recorder on the computer. So it is a long process to digitize an hour of tape.
You'd not to mention that not only are the tapes themselves 30 to 40 years old, the machines are 30 to 40 years old or more. So there's that whole aspect. I already literally, I've been doing this for about 2 years now, and I literally wore out one of the tape decks. I mean, it just
doesn't surprise me.
The bearings shot.
But we're going to piece it back together with pieces of other tape decks just to keep it going, because that's the Wart way.
That's the Wart way.
So we went digital, Tom, right? We went digital in about 2006. Isn't that kind of right?
That's sort of where the archives seem to start.
That's probably about right.
I have files that are from mini-disc and so forth that are older than that, but I don't think they were recorded on a computer. I think it was somebody took the mini-discs and dubbed them down. But I don't know when when I first set foot in here in the 90s, we still had reel-to-reel machines in the studios, and we used mini-disc for our promos, our carts. But that was a digital system, so.
Mm. We had a reel-to-reel deck in the studio until about a year ago. But
oh, yeah.
No one ever used it.
Yeah, it was just sitting in the corner of Combo A.
It was just for ambiance.
Yeah.
Well, we're nearing the end of the show here, so any last comments or thoughts about the 50th or anything we've talked about tonight? Anybody have a call out to the public for anything?
I'd say, you know, go to wart50@wartfm.org. I've gotten really good response to that and gotten in touch with some folks that had tapes and had other memorabilia. Even if you think we already have it, getting in touch with us is a good thing, because then we have your email address. We can let you know what's going on for 50th stuff, because there's going to be a bunch.
I just want to say thanks for listening for the last 50 years.
Yeah.
It's because of all of you that we're still here.
Yeah.
Because it'd be really boring if we just did it for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Tom, Aaron, Doug. I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. And we do have just another minute or so here for you to call in and hopefully give us one last pledge. That number is 608-256-2001. Ken is waiting out there for your call. You can also go online at wrtfm.org in case you don't want to talk to anybody, which I completely understand. It is so easy and streamlined on the website. But that's pretty much our show for this evening. Look forward to more shows like this in the future on the Access Hour. You can always check the Access Hour calendar. There will be listed there. That will be updated soon. And again, yeah, thank you for 50 years of listening to WRT, supporting us. Community radio stations are nothing without the community. They're nothing without your support. You're as much part of the radio station as we are. And I just want to say thank you and good night. And we'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to the Access Hour. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors. Remember, though, that this show relies on your ideas. An application to produce a program can be found on the internet at wortfm.org. Look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Music, talk, comedy, drama, or whatever can be conveyed over the radio, the Access Hour is anything you want it to be.
You've been listening to WORT, Back Porch Broadcasting, Madison.
But I still